And after discussion, I think it's probably more appropriate to have an overview on the current situation for our particle physics in high energy physics in terms of the current understanding and the current situation and in the near future experiments, and what we expect to discover and how we can achieve those goals. So I will spend quite some time to give you my personal overview on the current situation for high energy physics and tell you what I think where we are and where we're going. Okay. So I briefly introduced the need for the physics beyond the standard model, and then summarize the current ideas, what the theories we consider them as leading candidates for physics beyond the standard model, and then I will give you some brief flavor how we would expect to search for new physics beyond the standard model at the LHC, which is going to be our major enterprise in the next couple of years, presumably starting from 2007. And then finally, to make the all the discussions relevant to our workshop and hopefully to motivate you to work on linear collider physics, and I want to make some comparison between the physics expectation at the LHC and also what we expect to do, how we expect to do better for the International Linear Collider. So that is the plan. Standard model, as the as a low energy effective theory, it is extremely successful in terms of phenomenological observation. And the standard model, as you know, is constructed by a gauge theory with SU3 color interaction, and of course SU2 cross U1 for the electroweak interaction. Now let's think about the strong interaction as SU3. And the QCD theory has been extremely successful in comparison with high energy experiments, in particular perturbative QCD. Okay. So here is the predicted alpha S running versus the energy scale. Okay. Here is alpha S, the strong coupling constant, renormalized at the energy scale mu, and mu is the physical observable energy scale. Now you can see that it's very conclusive that those dots are the experimental observations. Here, obviously, is the measurement near the tau mass. Okay, the tau decay into certain hadrons, and you will be sensitive to some kind of a strong interaction. And then you move on to J psi and to I think here is about epsilon, but a few other energy scales. Yeah, this is the J psi state and the epsilon state, and here is the Tristan E plus minus linear collider measurements, and go on to lab and certain fixed targets, and also all the way go to about a few hundred GeV at higher energies, such as Tevitron and so on. So all these points actually fit in the curve very well. That means we really understand how the strong coupling constant evolves. So of course, this was awarded at the Nobel Prize last year. And here is another very impressive comparison between the theoretical prediction and the experiment. Here is the JS. So the JS is a very fundamental object, like a quark and gluon, in the fundamental Lagrangian in our QCD theory, but eventually hydronized into a bunch of observable hadrons. And this JS can be predicted in our QCD, and then this is the transverse momentum distribution, transverse with respect to the colliding beams, and the transverse momentum distribution in different angular ranges. So that's a different rapidity. Here is a different rapidity, means we observe the JS in different angular ranges. Okay. Now you can see, by many order magnitudes, so this here is almost 7 or 8 decades, in many different regions, the curves predicted by the theoretical perturbative calculations fit in the experimental measured dots very, very well. I think this is a D0 result from the Tevitron experiment. Now, with such a high accuracy, you really can trust the perturbative QCD theory with respect to the high energy QCD experiments. Okay. Not mentioning that the non-perturbative QCD, particularly the lattice gauge theory, has been able to calculate certain quantities, in particular for the fermion masses, and also some semileptonic decay form factors and so on and so forth, and they have achieved extremely impressive results as well. So the QCD is in a very concrete a corner. Now, if you look at ElectroWeek, and I think Hong Jian yesterday also showed you this already, and he has even a more updated version. I'm using the old one, 2003, and he has a version 2004. But overall, the qualitative feature and conclusion remain. Basically, with many, many precision measurements for the ElectroWeek parameters at many experiments, starting from fixed target experiments and move on to precision measurement at lab 1 and lab 2 and Tevatron and so on, all the parameters seem to fit in a consistent framework in the quantum field theory framework very well. But the important thing for us to understand here is this is rather abstract, but it's very illuminative. So here is a quantity W mass measurement and also in comparison with our theoretical calculation. Here versus the top quark mass measurement and also some theoretical calculation. Now the blue circle here indicates the direct measurement. Okay, here gives the direct measurement from the lab 2 experiments and also the Tevatron experiment. So here is the direct measurement for the W mass. And of course, this end gives you the direct measurement of the top quark mass only from the Tevatron. And here, the green curve here, the area shows you the indirect from the electric precision measurement and fitting, which has a theoretical input, because we can calculate the all the quantities at the quantum level, at the radio correction level. And in that calculation, all the other physical quantities, such as top quark mass, W mass, as well as the Higgs mass, will come in due to your quantum correction. Okay. Then this indirect measurement is from all this fitting, including our theoretical calculations. Now the red circle here is combined with these two results. And here is our best understanding so far. For the physical quantity W mass and top quark mass, for given several different values of Higgs mass, so you can see that if the Higgs mass is 800 GeV, and your calculations is a little bit inconsistent with our fitting. Now, if you have a Higgs mass around 100-200 GeV, then the theory seems to be more consistent. Therefore, this is the so-called indication that the light, relatively the light Higgs mass is preferred from the current precision measurements. Yeah, Zhou Huang.
Direct data and the indirect data is totally at one sigma level. It's in two distinct regions, right? Here, you what's your comment?
Yeah, I think this is for 90% confidence level. Yeah. So 90% confidence level, of course.
It's two regions, so it's separated with a distance, right?
Yeah, yeah. So if you combine these two with 90% confidence level, then this is the outcome. So certainly, from a statistical viewpoint, they are consistent. And you certainly look at so many measurements. All the different measurements will have different statistical and systematic effects. And you really shouldn't take these two regions not overlapping as any serious indication of inconsistency. So are you kind of worried why they don't overlap? This is, there's so many. It's so many. So two sigmas. 90% confidence.
Sigma for red.
Yeah, two sigma for red. For the red.
Blue one is one sigma.
I think so. I think it's all these two dots are the one sigma circle, and the two, this is a two sigma combination. But if you have if you even do well, I don't think there's any indication inconsistency. I think this is extremely impressive, consistent result with so many variables and so many quantities to all come into play. Okay, so the conclusion I was trying to tell you is that I think it's quite convincing, at least at this current situation, that a relatively the light Higgs seem to fit in the picture better. So that's why most people are thinking the possibility to have a light Higgs. So the standard model as an effective theory seems to work pretty well, and we know that once you parameterize your effective theory at this scalar potential, and you can generate the electric symmetry breaking by spontaneous symmetry breaking for developing this non-zero vacuum expectation value. Okay. So then once this is done in your theory, then all other particle masses are in place in the theory. So this is a fantastic model. So the Gauge bosons will gain masses proportional to the Gauge boson coupling and proportional to the web, and the photon remains massless after the linear combination. All the fermions obtain mass all proportional to a single vacuum expected value. This is quite economical, of course, and we don't know the Yukawa coupling strength. We have to give the arbitrary values of Yukawa coupling strength to accommodate a big, vast, different mass scale from leptons to quarks. And this vacuum expected value is determined by the observation. So G Fermi is measured, the decay, muon decay constant. And in particular, nowadays, you can connect this to W mass. W mass is precisely measured as a sharp resonance from our experimental observation. So except the Higgs mass involves this free parameter, and the Higgs mass is unknown, and the Higgs particle has not been observed, everything else seems to be in place. In the standard model, if you trust this as an effective theory, it is in a very good situation. Now, consider this as an effective theory, and consider this as an effective theory below this cutoff lambda. And the theory probably will be replaced by something else more complete above this cutoff lambda. Thinking about that way, and this figure tells you that the theory seemed to, the renormalizable theory seemed to be trivial or inconsistent if the lambda parameter is not too big. So lambda parameter is directly related to the Higgs mass. Square root of lambda is Higgs mass. So the Higgs mass cannot be too heavy, or the lambda parameter should not be too big for the theory to be consistent. This is typically the triviality argument or the consistency argument from some lattice simulation. Okay. On the other hand, the lambda parameter should not be too small. If the lambda parameter is too small, the quantum corrections may destroy your the shape of the potential. Maybe make this quartic coupling turn over negative, so the vacuum is not bounded from below. That means you don't have in the long run you don't have a stable vacuum, and the universe probably will undergo some phase transition to disappear. So you won't have a stable vacuum. So if you want to have a vacuum to be stable within this theory, the lambda, the quartic term coefficient should not be too small. So that tells you that this part is not consistent. Somewhere in between is still consistent. And here is a precision measurement, and this is Hong Jian showed yesterday the direct search is 113 GeV. So somewhere in between, the theory is perfectly consistent. Of course, many other problems I will tell you, but this is perfectly consistent with effective theory. And maybe the theory may be valid all the way up to quantum scale. Effective theory, but it works. So, the theory has a stable vacuum, non-trivial interactions, fully renormalizable. If you are not more ambitious than this, the standard model with the light Higgs may work as well as anything you can expect for. So what is the problem then? So the question will be, why we need physics beyond standard model? Why we have been talking about physics beyond standard model so much? Now let me go over this, the problems, and eventually I go to the most severe problem I think of, and to motivate our next search. First of all, the big separation for the mass spectrum is very alarming. Now, this region is what we have learned best. Okay. Here is the WZ masses around a few hundred, around 100 GeV region here, electroweak, typically electroweak scale. And top quark mass is quite similar. It's you cover coupling order of one. Okay. Top quark is really the same as the vacuum expectation value in the electroweak sector. And we also expect something to happen like the Higgs to make a theory fully renormalizable and all these good properties. And then some, you know that by something like five orders of magnitude, you have these light fermions, like MeV range fermions, and half MeV electrons. Why is this so? Well, we put in the Yukawa couplings by hand. Okay. Now we know that neutrinos are massive because of the observation for neutrino oscillations. Then definitely neutrino must be massive. The current understanding is neutrino mass is less than the electron volts overall. But from the mass difference, it's even 10 to minus 3 electron volts. In that 10 to minus 3 also in that region. So now see, how dare we even put another coupling, something like 10 orders of magnitude smaller? Well, you could do that, but it's very, very inconvenient, particularly from theoretical viewpoint. will be very uneasy to do so. Now, from the electric scale down to the neutrino mass scale, it is something like 15 orders of magnitude below. Okay. Now, you really need to think harder whether there's any more fundamental physics at work. Maybe seesaw magnetism or maybe something else. Okay. Not mentioning further up, we know the gravity has the dimension. The Newton constant has dimension. It indicates the Newton constant to be, again, 15 orders or so higher than the electric scale. So what is the reason to have a such big mass hierarchy between one to the other? So that's the natural question for us to consider. Okay. Well, the mass hierarchy sometimes is not too difficult to understand. For example, now let's consider the QCD. Here I want to indicate some different energy scales. Typical energy scale is the most important thing in physics. Okay. Whenever you do experiments, you give me the scale. You use your ruler. You use a meter or you use a centimeter, you use a nanometer. The size, the physical scale, is associated with the physics. It's not mass. So once you have a physics scale, then you really have the right description for the world. Now let's look at quite a few different fundamental, seemingly fundamental mass scales. The first one is QCD, we know. The QCD has this QCD condensation, and from strong dynamics, we know that's the definition of the lambda QCD. Lambda QCD is somewhere the QCD interaction becomes strong. Then the perturbative description fails to be valid. And that's essentially the pions and the protons, these bond states appear. Okay? Now this QCD condensation is around a few hundred MeV. It's typically the QCD, lambda QCD scale. Now if you renormalize this theory to do the coupling constant running, as I showed you from the first figure, okay, this coupling constant running all the way up to the current highest energy, 200 GeV, many, many orders of magnitude, it's perfectly understandable. It's because this is a natural theory. This renormalizable, symmetrically-free, renormalizable theory. So these two large scales, from one high-energy scale, like the Teletron energy, or LHC energy, or linear collider energy, can be connected to the lambda QCD in this way. This is the exponential running, because the coupling is logarithmic. So running from one scale to the other scale is connected by the exponential running. It's perfectly understandable. That's why some people like the next example I want to give you, strong dynamics, technicolor. That's the strong dynamics give you this natural understanding between two vastly different energy scales. It's understandable. It's just from quantum field theory. So once we know this structure of the non-leading and asymptotically free quantum field theory, we understand the relation between one scale to the other, no matter how far away they are. The QCD is a perfect example, dynamical, and we understand everything. We don't worry about the large scale difference in this situation. However, let's look at the next one. This the Fermi constant tells you there's another electroweak condensation, very similar to this case. But what is the mechanism for this condensation? We don't know. Whether it's from some similar dynamics, we don't know. Whether it's from fundamental Higgs or supersymmetry to introduce a fundamental Higgs, we don't know the underlying dynamics. This is really the key things for us to explore in the next generation experiments. Okay. Of course, many models can do the job. It's really easy to break electric symmetry breaking. Actually, this interaction breaks electric symmetry breaking as well, but it gives you too little a mass to generate the double Z mass. They give you something typically like a few hundred MeV. It's not enough. But you must have a new theory to accommodate the heavy W Z mass. The another scale is the gravity scale I mentioned. Again, this scale, we have no clue at all. Whether this is fundamental or not, it's just from the very weak gravity interaction Newton constant. We have no clue for that as well. So the most crucial thing for us, of course, to try to understand how this electric symmetry breaking happens, what is the fundamental dynamics responsible for that. Okay, so I think you start being somewhat worrisome about the theory beyond standard model already, right? From the first transparency, I told you the standard model works so well. And now you seem to be, if you follow me, you seem to think that maybe something is going on beyond standard model, beyond the simplest Higgs factor. Now let's make this even more drastic. Consider some other observations. This is certainly observed. We know the fermion generation, three, at least for the relatively light ones, and why is that? We have no better understanding. Quark mixing and the CP violation. So they all put in place by hand. Neutrino masses, they are nearly mass moment mixing and nearly many, many order of magnitude smaller, whether we have a other CP violation or it's the CKM is a whole story. That is all observed. And none of this can be understood in a satisfactory way within the standard model. Now the unification picture, and I think we shouldn't say that's observed, and it's more than desirable. It's really more than desirable. It's almost speculative, but it's really, people should think about this seriously. For example, gate interactions, and we know the electric weak actually meet very nicely in the electric scale and into the standard model three interactions. And your copper couplings are completely arbitrary in whether they can come together into a more uniform form. And masses, all these masses are drastically different whether they have a better picture to put them together. If you read the Frank Wolchek's Nobel laureate speech, and he made this a very nice observation. Because remember Landau once abandoned QED. Landau, of course, was one of the early people to study QED physics, but he abandoned QED because of so-called Landau pole. If you run the coupling constant, it's not asymptotically free. It eventually blows up. That means new physics must show up. This theory is not going to not going to work because new physics must show up. Okay, when the Hong Jian talks about unitarity a lot, why unitarity is important? It doesn't mean the theory is not it's not right. It means the new physics must come in to cure the unitarity. This calculation tells you new physics, new strong dynamics, something else should come in to replace the current theory. So similarly, in the standard model, the U1 interaction is not renormalized. It's not asymptotically free. If you run U1 theory way all the way to somewhere, it reaches the Landau pole, of course, very, very far. But nevertheless, it's not going to be the final theory. Some theory must come in. If you follow the QCD example, the successful example in QCD, something seems to be happening. It's the most desirable thing will be some unification to give you a single group to unify the theory. That is very appealing, very attractive. I think it's even just more than desirable. Okay. U1 theory cannot go all the way up. Something must come in somewhere. Furthermore, nowadays we have a lot of experimental observation from gravitational interactions as well as early universe cosmology. So nowadays, in particular, the cosmology comes closer and closer to particle physics. I also partially due to the idea and due to the approach of asymptotic freedom. Because only in that case, the interactions at higher energies and higher temperatures can be understood from our perturbation theory, and then you can predict certain features for the early universe. Okay. So now we do have certain models to describe the early universe, but we don't know the gravity scales, we don't know the further particle contents, whether the inflation model is, which one is at work, and in particular the barogenesis to give you the baryon asymmetry like we observe now. And dark matter candidates, we can find dark matter candidates in particle physics as a leading candidate as well. And even worse, lately people have been contemplating on some possible dark energy, which basically has no, essentially no role in particle physics. But particle physics does have the ability to address most of the questions here. So, I think it's fair to say, all of these discussions I gave you for the past three transparencies indicate the severe need for physics beyond standard model. Okay. So standard models seem to work phenomenologically really well, but it's almost obvious to all of us it's not going to be the full story. And most likely, in the next generation of experiments to explore the electric weak scale, then the new physics should show up. Okay. Now let me concentrate on the electric sector more. Then. This is even, I think to me, a somewhat even more immediate concern. Which has something to do with the electric symmetry breaking. In the simplest standard model we described in the first two three transparencies, we predict the existence of a scalar we call that Higgs. But this Higgs scalar here does not have any other symmetry to protect the quantum corrections for the mass. Okay. But the fermions do have the chiral symmetry in it to protect the large corrections. And just like electron mass fraction, in your QED, when you calculate the mass, electron mass fraction, you find that even you put all the energies into, all the universe energy into the corrections, the correction to the fermion bare mass will be something like 30% or so. It's not a big deal. Okay, so even so, you understand the mass is very stable against quantum corrections. Gauge symmetry protects the gauge bosons from large mass correction, but nothing to protect your scalar mass correction. As a consequence, the standard model particles may even contribute to the Higgs mass corrections quadratically. Okay, if you just count the dimension, you can easily count the dimension that the corrections go like the quadratic sensitivity. Now, if you move your cutoff scale, if you say you are, I said that cutoff scale may be as high as a Planck scale for the theory to be fully renormalized, everything is fine. But then, in that case, you need huge cancellation among the terms. Now, the renormalized Higgs mass is light. It's from our indication, from the precision measurement indication. Now, this is small, 200 GeV square or so. But here, each term gives you a quadratically sensitive dependence upon the cutoff scale. Even as a scale, the cutoff to be 10 TeV only, not even put this to all the way to Planck scale yet. Okay. Now you see some cancellation must be happening, and eventually at something like at several orders, four orders of magnitude cancellation against the bare mass. Bare mass is some quantity you put in by hand to cancel the other things to give you the renormalizable physical quantity. This is renormalizable. This is just a standard renormalization process, but the cancellation is rather severe. Yes, Roman? Yeah.
Why do you need a cutoff scale at all? Why can't you just renormalize it with a standard Forman epsilon dimensional regularization?
Yes. I mean, this okay. Would be yeah. That's a good CD. Question. Many people have this concern. They say if you put a cutoff regularization, this is what you see. But if you use dimensional regularization, you always have some like 1/Epsilon pole, and you don't see this. This is misleading. First of all, this cutoff scale is physical. That is the physical picture. It's not a scheme. The dimensional regularization is a scheme. You can see the dimensional regularization. If you do the dimensional regularization, you find a 1/Epsilon pole at dimension 2. That's dimension 2 coupling. That's a dimension 2 correction. It's not at the dimension 4. It's not 4D divergence. The 4D divergence usually can be identified into something like the logarithm in running or something. But here it happens at a much lower dimension. That's why I mentioned that you should count the dimensionality. And actually, this is the physical dimensionality analysis that the energy scale, energy squared term must come in. Even you do your dimensional regularization, you find the pole is not at the physical 4 dimension. It's at dimension 2. That corresponds to the energy square substitution rather than logarithmic running. So this is physical. The dimensional regularization is committing a scheme to do this. But this is physical. There are more arguments, and if Bill Barton is sitting here, he would shake his head too. But that's a separate thing, and we can, after some beer, we can talk about his thing too. Yeah. I think this is physical. This quadratic sensitivity is really the physical effect. You have to eventually you end up having it. Now, to give you another illustration how the cancellation happens, it is because you are very positive bare mass you put in by hand to cancel the huge cancellation from the heavy fermions. In the center model, the top is the heaviest one. So this cancellation happened to be many orders of magnitude in order to keep the Higgs mass rather light. Now, if I demand the cancellation not too severe, like the 90% cancellation, save me 10% as a physical quantity, 90% cancellation or so. In that case, that means your cutoff scale cannot be pushed too far away. So for the top quark, it's about 3 TeV. That is similar to the unitarity bound. For interesting physical reasons, it's about 3 TeV or so. Top quark associated new physics should show up around 3 TeV or so. Not much higher, otherwise the fine tune becomes severe. The W is weaker, so about 10 TeV or so, and Higgs self interaction is slightly even weaker, so it's about 10 TeV or so in that region. Any new physics below this is quite reasonable or anticipated. Any physics way beyond that suffers from severe fine tune. Let me give you an example of what the fine tune level could be. If you really believe this cutoff theory is valid all the way up to Planck scale, 19 GeV or so, then the cancellation for this quantity, for those quantities against this one, will be something like 34 orders of magnitude. You have to cancel the 34 order of magnitude for the first 34 digits to reach the 35 digits to give you 200 GeV. That is much fine tune. Give you another example to say the severeness of this fine tune. That means you ask me to fine tune this accuracy. If you shoot a target from Earth to the Moon, okay, you shoot a target. The accuracy required for this cancellation is you have to shoot the accuracy on the Moon target to be more accurate than 10 to minus 15 angstrom. So that's the much too serious a requirement for nature to realize. The God may do this, but that's for us, for theorists, to understand. We think this is a severe problem, that a new physics must show up below this if we want to have the theory rather than natural. The naturalist requirement has been the driving force for most of the recent theoretical developments for the past several years. There are exceptions, I can tell you, but I think most people try to understand the theory with a naturalist requirement. Okay, so I think I have convinced you that the physics must show up not too far away, and new physics beyond standard model must show up not too far away. Even the standard model so far works so well phenomenologically, even the standard model could be an effective theory all the way up to Planck scale with the light Higgs. Okay, any disagreement? No, everybody agrees. So now let's move on. There are many theoretical scenarios to realize, basically realize the discussions that I mentioned here, and also to implement the so-called naturalist argument. Okay? Supersymmetry is the first example. I think supersymmetry is probably is still the leading candidate in this chart. The Higgs mass corrections are calculated in the supersymmetric theory because of the tension between the standard model particles and the supersymmetry partners. The quadratic sensitivity is replaced by the supersymmetry breaking scale. If you send the supersymmetry breaking scale all the way to a new very high cutoff, and the supersymmetry is again unnatural. Okay. So now you see the otherwise logarithmic renormalizable effect. And here is the scale difference between the typical standard model scale and the supersymmetry breaking scale. If the supersymmetry were unbroken, and the standard model particles and the partners have the exactly same masses, then there will be no correction. So that's a symmetry. Okay, the symmetry, the correction will be identically zero. So that predicts the supersymmetry must happen in the TeV scale not too far away from standard model in order to solve this naturalist problem. If you believe supersymmetry is a candidate to solve the naturalist problem, supersymmetry at the TeV scale is predicted. So that's called the weak scale supersymmetry. And therefore, that's what most people commonly believe at the LHC, even at the linear collider, and all, and so on and so forth. Next generation collider experiments should reveal this new physics at the TeV scale. And also predict the Higgs, several more Higgses, and as partners. All the particles have their partners, typically heavier, but typically mass is given by this scale. So this leads to very rich physics with many other beautiful implications, such as ground unification and dark matter candidate, and electric symmetry breaking by radio interactions, many interesting features as well. The second approach to solve this naturalist problem is the example I gave you from QCD. If this electric symmetry breaking is indeed by some dynamical condensation, if this scale is indeed typically around 450 GeV to accommodate the G Fermi and accommodate the WZ masses, you need to introduce some new interactions, stronger than QCD, and new condensated particles. It's typically called a technicolor. Of course, you generate the fermion masses, you need to introduce the extended technicolor to accommodate many things, walking and other things. Phenomenologically, this is very difficult. The reason is that the interaction becomes so strong, even near the electric scale, then the precision measurements don't favor these new strong interactions. It's precision measurements with the light Higgs seem to fit in the current picture better. So that's all. Otherwise, this picture theoretically has very strong attraction. Of course, there are other modification to accommodate the heavy top quark, and Hong Jian involved with some of these the works as well. And you consider top quark to be special, and so that the top quark may play a role to do the condensation and so on and so forth. And there are other less ambitious approaches, like the physics with actual dimensions in the electric sector, such as the little Higgs. The little Higgs is somewhere in between. The little Higgs does not go all the way to the supersymmetry side, but the little Higgs does not all realize the technical interaction. But just to say, well, the little Higgs probably is a nonlinear sigma model effective theory, and above that, there are some strong interactions, and the little Higgs is light. So in this theory, you have naturally a light Higgs, which actually comes from some strong dynamics. Okay. It's somewhere in between, it's less ambitious, but phenomenologically possible, and conceptually new. Conceptually new, interesting, and not like technical, and not like fundamental supersymmetry. But it also has definite predictions. The theoretical structures must be like that in order to realize the quadratic cancellation as leading order. But there are many scenarios like that. The third class would be something like the extra dimension at a relatively low scale, TeV scale, quantum gravity scale, and so on and so forth. The idea is that if you have an extra dimension beyond our XYZ and time, but this extra dimension may be compactified, you don't observe directly. Okay? So now if you put in your theoretical action and to integrate over the extra dimensions, you find that the four-dimensional Planck scale, that's our Newton constant, it's given by a combination. Given by a combination of a more fundamental Planck scale times the integration over the extra dimensions. It's effectively the volume extra dimensions. And therefore, this theory is telling you that the hierarchy, the Planck scale so far away, is not fundamental. The fundamental thing is the much, much lower quantum gravity scale, or maybe string scale, times the relatively large volume of extra dimensions. This combination can give you a large value of the Planck mass, or small y. This, you can say y, this is the Newton interaction is so weak. But the understanding for this is, you can understand this from your classical field, classical ENM. The Gauss's law tells you the force strength is proportional to the E field, the flux, the density, right? The force density. The further away, the weaker the force is, because density, the force density is weaker. But if you have extra dimension for the gravitational interaction to go through, then let's dilute your flux. So the weakness of this Newton constant is not really because any fundamental smaller coupling constant. Rather, it's the large extra dimension take away so much of the gravitational flux into. So when after integrate that out, this is very little left. That's why this scale is so high. That's why Newton constant is so weak. Gravitational interaction is so weak. So if you do have this TeV scale quantum gravity, that would be observable in the next generation collider experiments. That would be exciting, fantastic, right? Searching for extra dimension has long history. Searching for extra dimension actually has 100 years history. Now, how many people don't realize is that searching for extra dimension is nothing more than searching for new particles. This gives you the very simple illustration how to connect the searching for new particles and searching for extra dimensions. Consider you have a five-dimensional theory, and this theory, this is the field, this particle field in 5D. X is our 4D coordinates, and plus one extra dimension y. Now, the extra dimension is compactified, finite, compact anyways, whichever shape. Let's consider a circle for simplicity. Then you have this Fourier transformation. The first part is the four-dimensional components, and the exponential part actually is the Fourier mode for that. If you put this into a massless the equation of motion, then you take the derivative with respect to the fifth one. You find this the equation of motion really becomes a four-dimensional theory. You just don't even need to think about five-dimensional theory. You really are thinking about the four-dimensional field like this with a massive particle. The mass is given by the derivative of here. That's 1 over r. That's r is the size. So now equation of motion now tells you that this becomes a massive particle in 4D. In our four-dimensional world, and this is a massive particle. The mass, zero mode is a zero mode, massless mode, maybe graviton. Let's say our typical graviton. But the non-zero modes are so-called closed client excitations. You heard the closed client modes a lot from other talks, and in particular Hongjie talk. But it's very interesting mass generation. It's a geometrical mass generation, spontaneously. Now, searching for the extra dimension is equivalent to search for those particles. Once you find the mass difference tells you the size of extra dimension. The mass difference for the towers tells you the size of the compactification of extra dimension. So searching for extra dimension is equivalent to search for the towers, one after another, one particle after another, with a mass difference 1 over r, typically, for simple geometry. Of course, this relation may change if the compactification geometry is more complicated. So, of course, we haven't seen the extra dimension particles like photons, electrons. So those particles probably don't propagate into the extra dimension, or maybe 1 over r is still large, not accessible by the current experiments yet. Maybe that's hopeful for the next generation experiment. There's another possibility to realize extra dimension physics in a very qualitative different way, so-called the Randall syndrome. It means the extra dimension is not flat. It has a shape. I mean, the extra dimension actually, the extra dimension has a shape. If you scale that to our four dimension will have this, the overall changing factor with respect to the extra dimension. So here is our standard model. We are living on this wall. This is our four dimension already, but with respect to the fifth dimension, the shape changes. Okay. So that's it's very interesting, has very interesting physical consequences, and I probably would not have time to discuss about that. But overall, those are the three popular classes of the theories, such as supersymmetry, strong dynamics, and extra dimension physics. These three classes of theories all can address the naturalness problem to some extent, and all lead to interesting rich physics in next generation experiments, and all have other interesting consequences for the unification and the cosmology and so on and so forth. I think it's worthwhile, interesting to explore these approaches. Fortunately, we are approaching a data-rich era. So that's very important thing, very encouraging thing. I think in particular for, how much time I have? Okay. We have a very successful hydrodynamics program. In particular, the CP violation weak interactions, such as in B system and Kayon system and so on and so forth. B factories certainly have provided important information for the flavor structure and the CP violation and so on and so forth. Neutrino masses actually give you the first indication you need to construct something beyond standard model. It could be trivial, but it could be very profound. Okay. Now, the precision measurements from flavor changing, the lepton sector, and G minus 2, and so on and so forth, will give you important constraints. And some people even claim the muon G minus 2 measurements indicate some supersymmetry signal already, which I think is too early to conclude, but it's certainly going to the right interesting direction. And proton decay is getting more and more accurate and also give you very strong bound on the new physics scale and the grand unification scale and so on. Now, in connection with cosmology, dark matter, the particle physics, we seem to be able to provide the best dark matter candidate. Particle dark matter seem to be more convincing than most other possible candidates. So we can easily accommodate particle dark matter. But in particular, our collider experiments will be able to say something about this and make some connections. So this is really important. The other cosmology constraints, like the overall neutrino mass, the electron volts, and the inflation model, and dark energy, and so on and so forth, you have a lot of data to pour in. So that would be very interesting to compare with our data, too. Now, yet to come, the Tevatron is running well, then the luminosity is coming up pretty close to the design luminosity, and they even celebrate, a few weeks ago, they even celebrate the first femtobarn barn luminosity collection. Okay, the champagne bottles that popped up to celebrate. That's very encouraging, and we will have a multi-femtobarn luminosity to play with. And LHC is a done deal. Hopefully 2007 and possibly 2008, but coming up really soon. We have to really prepare this well in order to play an important role. So all of us should pay attention to this LHC era, and most likely a lot of new physics will come out from LHC. I will show you a few examples if I have time. Of course, linear collider is the next generation lepton collider, and certainly has the ability to be very clean and very impressive experiments. That's what we are here for, and we want to explore the machine aspect and the collider detector aspect, as well as the physics potential, and hopefully you will find some interesting topics to work on your own. So that's a real goal. It's not just reading what we have said here, but to find your own way to find whether there are interesting physics people should think about, and that's the goal for the summer school, and for you to take off from here. So now let me quickly go through what we expect to have to learn from the LHC, and finally compare with the linear kinematic expectation. Hadron collider has an advantage. Very high central mass energy, in particular for PP collisions, and you can the PP collision can be as high as total central mass energy 14, but a part of central mass energy is somewhat smaller. But nevertheless, it has a spectrum. It can go very high. And many channels simultaneously to show up. Fermion annihilation, gluon-gluon annihilation, fermion-gluon annihilation, then the heavy fermion annihilation, BB bar annihilation, gate boson annihilation. They all show up simultaneously. Pick up your favorite. But of course, hadron collider has problems that, with huge backgrounds and very difficult for detection and low efficiency and so on and so forth. So that's not the topic we want to do. I want to quickly summarize what the LHC could do and why we do this, and then we move on. So first of all, again, we are hoping to find the lead Higgs. So far the precision measurements seem to favor the lead Higgs. Now the lead Higgs is the one responsible for the mass generation. Because of this feature, it coupled to the masses, coupled to the fermion mass proportional to the fermion mass here and the proportional to the Gibbs boson mass here as well. And you find some particle like this, you have to verify this feature. And this particle really coupled to the particles proportional to the mass. And that one is the definite one to be responsible for the mass generation. Okay. So at the LHC, you have the opportunity. At the LHC, you can search for this with many hundred thousands of the particles produced. Many, it's actually many, but it's very difficult to dig out. But with very hard work, and the conclusion is even all the way up to 700-800 GeV, the Higgs mass, and you still have the ability, even with only 100 immune fermion bar, which is probably canonical luminosity 1 year running. It's not even high luminosity, not low luminosity. And this particle, of course, decay preferably to heavy particles as the property desired. So in a sense, here is the next plot. I don't want to show you the details, but the conclusion is from some atlas is one of the large detectors. The large detector tells you, combining many production channels, combining many decay channels, this is a solid curve is the final conclusion. This is a statistical signal significance versus the Higgs mass. All the way up to 1 TeV or so from a 100 GeV region, you can typically reach something like 10 sigma observational statistical observation. So it's quite conclusive. And I don't want to show you the supersymmetry Higgs anymore, but it's the conclusion is similar. You can find at least one. And most likely you will find more than one simultaneously for the other Higgs, for the SUSY case as well, at the LHC. Okay. Now, supersymmetry. Weak signal supersymmetry predicts the particles to be around TeV scale. You can see the cross sections are very high. Here are the many processes, a Guarino pair. So here is the neutralino pair, and the Gagino pair, and here is a Gagino Guarino pair production. Here is a Swan pair, stop pairs, and here is Swan pair, other highly Swan pairs, and Guarino pair. So you see the cross section is typically a few hundred picobars. It's very large. It's typically like electric processes. If they are not as heavy, it will be even strong interaction processes, like a W pair production, even more. So the cross section, the production is high, and the search, again, is difficult. The final state backgrounds are large, and you need to do a lot of kinematics, and because it's even not like Higgs to have resonance, you usually miss the lightest one. It's difficult, but the conclusion is optimistic. Typically, LHC has 100 times the larger cross section than Tevitron, even all the way for typically a few TeV SUSY scales. Then LHC can have the very comprehensive coverage for the SUSY search. Okay, so let's find that. If the supersymmetry doesn't show up at the LHC, supersymmetry probably is not the right candidate to be responsible for the electric symmetry breaking. Okay. And of course, you can search for many other particles like new gate bosons and new hybrid quarks and so on and so forth. And again, I don't go through the details, but the conclusion again is quite optimistic. And here's Atlas simulation for the little Higgs scenario with a heavy Z for 2 TeV. You can see, obviously, even with a very different coupling, so you can see a clear bump on top of the background. The heavy gate bosons are covered. The heavy top is more interesting to tell you that the QCD production is even not as large as electroweak, because electroweak has a single top production, like very similar to Professor CPU I mentioned. The mechanism is the same mechanism, but just produce a heavy one. And that one becomes even more significant due to the phase space and the strong interaction for the longitudinal gate boson today. It's very interesting physics, very interesting observation here too. Anyway, so after the simulate, this process is to say that for one TeV or two TeV the heavy top type of signature, you can find this above the background. So the LSC seems to have a very comprehensive coverage for most new physical scenarios we can think of. Now let's move on to active emission. Many people are interested in active emission. Let me spend maybe one or two more transparencies I probably should have to discuss the actual dimension scenario. 10 minutes? Okay. Okay, let's go this quick. Maybe I only tell you the qualitative feature. Qualitative feature is very interesting for you to know, rather than quantitative. Okay. Searching for active dimension, as I said, is equivalent to search for the full-time residences and so on and so forth. But active dimension has many other aspects. Active dimension physics will have a gravitational physics input, will have a string physics input as well. So let's go over what overall you expected. At a very low energy, suppose our experimental probe, your energy probe, is very low, much lower than the fundamental scale, even lower than the compactification scale. That means that the active dimension size is very small. So your probe energy is low, it doesn't resolve, doesn't come into the active dimension. That's what we are doing now. Okay, your quantum gravity scale is maybe Planck scale, and this compactification scale in the typical string theory is also in the gas scale. So this scale is very, very high. So our energy acceptable is very low. What do you do? It's just a standard model plus weakly coupled gravity. That's what we our current situation. Okay, if there's active dimension, but in this energy regime, that's what we are doing currently. You don't see any active dimension effect, only weakly coupled gravity. Now, suppose we improve our experimental situation to have our energy accessible into the active dimension. Your probe is more energetic, boom, it gets into the size of the active dimension. But still not as high as the fundamental gravity scale in this region. That's what you do. You actually run into the active dimension already. You march into the active dimension. What you see is more than the standard model also includes the closed Klein excitation. You excited the closed Klein space. So that's where you look for the you really march into the active dimension. If your energy is is smaller than the wavelength or the size of that one, so you probe into the active dimension already. So that's what you see, and you find the active dimension by looking for the closed Klein excitation typically. So whatever propagates, maybe the gravitons, whatever propagates into the active dimension, you find the closed Klein state. If the electron propagates, then you find the electron towers, whatever propagates into. Okay. Now, if your energy is even higher, all the way into this active dimension, even close to the fundamental gravity scale, that's where I claim that's where the most important thing. That's because that threshold region is most significant and most probable area to really find the new physics, not ambiguously. Okay. So in that case, you are reaching some resonance, maybe string resonance or whatever the fundamental interaction gives you. So here is the most interesting, but most difficult to describe theoretically. We tried, so we can talk about this more. But nevertheless, energy regime in that region, if the active dimension fundamental scale is really around TeV, then you are really reaching that region at the LSC. Finally, for the trans-Planckian energy, if the energy is even larger, if we are so lucky, unbelievably lucky, I probably don't believe that. But if you are really unbelievably lucky that the quantum gravity scale is even lower than the LHC energy, then you go across the quantum gravity scale. You go to essentially classical gravity. So then you produce the classical particle scattering, you produce a black hole. Okay? Because the energy is all of a sudden squeezed, so much energy is squeezed into some smaller scale that is a smaller size with a scale larger than the black hole masses. And the largest contribution with the black hole production, rather than any quantum physical processes. So, if the energy is bigger than black hole mass, if the impact parameter, the two beams, are smaller than the Schwarzschild radius, then the dominant production is black hole. Okay. So, here's a picture then that you have the incoming beams like this to hit into each other. then the cross section is essentially the size of a black hole, geometrical cross section. So that's the picture. So I don't want to go into the numbers anymore because the time is running out. But the conclusion is that a few TeV region and the quantum gravity, you can really find the string resonance. It's very interesting pictures. And the black hole production is huge if the production is really the geometrical. Even you have certain radiation corrections and other things by a few orders of magnitude, you still are left with a sufficient number of events, and LHC will be the black hole factory. If you're lucky, okay. So anyways, it's a fantastic physical opportunity for the LHC. Now let's come back to our main point. So what about our linear collider? Synergy means interplay and the complementarity between these two machines. Okay. Let's outline this in this scenario. Suppose we are lucky, and suppose most of us are right, then some new particle states observed at LHC at very, very likely. I think it's very, very likely at the TeV scale, new physics will show up. Unitarity argument is the strongest one to tell you, TeV scale. Suppose that is the case, then you may have many other particles, but LHC environment would not be able to tell you what these particles are, such as precise masses and coupling strength and even spin. The only when you have these rather precise measurements in the E plus minus environment, you can really sort out all the other things. That is extremely crucial for us to understand the nature of the interactions. Otherwise, you still have no clue. Remember, even the WZ discovered so long, people are still testing the gauge interactions. Only until you have lab 1, lab 2 measurements, lab 2 in particular measurements, you can say that the interactions are really very much like SU2 cross U1. Okay, so otherwise, we are still arguing what these particles are. Few hundred GeV threshold, you really detailed spectroscopy measurements for the linear collider, including spins and for the threshold and decay pattern and so on and so forth. Precise measurement for the couplings and so on and so forth. And in particular, the gamma collider will tell you the scalar sector. Scalar sector, again, is difficult even at the LHC. You have the Higgs or maybe the pseudo-scalar resonance production from the gamma-gamma fusion and so on and so forth. And the Giger Z option certainly will give you the precision measurement to put everything in consistent quantum correction picture. And it's fair to say that with this detailed study, it is sufficient or conclusive to distinguish the fundamental theories such as supersymmetry and technicolor and maybe action dimension, so on and so forth. So this is a crucial detailed understanding for us to claim one theory versus the other. Now, suppose we are less lucky. If we only find one light Higgs, only one light Higgs, like the standard model situation. But then, again, the precision measurements from these processes, like the Higgs trilon and WW Higgs and the top quark to measure the Yukawa coupling, if the Higgs coupling is enhanced, like in supersymmetry situation and so on and so forth, and this channel will be important show up as well. And again, this linear collider will be the only place to have the ability to measure this to a high accuracy. For example, the gamma-gamma collider will measure this at a percentage level. And without this percentage level measurement, then the Higgs property is still quite uncertain. Again, given the effect, we will check the consistency with the light Higgs. So it's important to have, I think that if you only find one Higgs, it's not bad for the linear collider. Actually, it's even stronger motivation for us to go there to measure all details to see what exactly this particle is. And in particular, to see whether there are other particles missed in the LHC environment, which is quite possible. You produce those things you just don't observe because of the relatively messy experimental environment. Okay. Well, suppose life is slightly harder. You only find one Higgs. It's even heavier than the standard model one you expected from the LHC. What does that mean? That's even more important for us to have a linear collider because you want to make sure there are no missing ones. It's very possible there is a light Higgs that's missed from the observation at the LHC collider environment. You won't miss this in the E plus minus collider environment. So certainly you want to search and confirm nothing else there you missed at the LHC. If you do miss these things, then this is crucial to tell you which theory it is. And also, you can do the precision measurement at a higher mass region. Then this is the fusion process; it's the dominant one. It's more important than this one, and here. Okay. Then gamma-gamma collider again can sit on the resonance through a few hundred GeV, and then to measure this to a high accuracy to see exactly what these interactions are. And also, the Giga Z will do this too. Suppose you find nothing at the LSE, which is highly unlikely. So I can bet a lot of money, $20 on it. So here, that doesn't really mean there's nothing there. You really should confirm whether there's anything from the clean environment. Quite likely, after a few years running, you still haven't been at the LSE. You still haven't been able to understand your detector well to dig out these things yet. You remember how hard it is for Tevatron to discover the top and measure the other quantities. Remember, D0 even measured the Z-mass to be 60 TeV for a long time. So really, it's a very difficult experiment. And if you don't find anything, it's even more important for us to be sure that what has been missed, what hasn't been missed. So you want to be conclusive to search for all this, and maybe we are lucky to find this in the Yip-Polymerizer collider rather than the Hadron collider. And the bread butter physics certainly is there. Bread butter physics means basic physics, always there, no matter what. With Higgs, without Higgs, you can measure the top quark mass to a better position and for the consistency. You can measure the W and threshold and so on and so forth, and checking the consistency as well. So I think the physics case, to me, is quite convincing that we really should have the linear collider on board as soon as we are able to. So that's the workshop is for. I'm not going to summarize the fantastic talks by everybody, but rather give you my personal view for the current situation for the high-energy physics, both theoretically and phenomenologically. Now, the standard model is, again, incomplete. Everybody seems to have been convinced. Nobody challenged me. And many new ideas go beyond standard model and to be tested in the next generation collider experiments. The only collider experiment can tell us about this. So let's work together, go for the LSE and also for the International Linear Collider as well. Thank you very much.
So now we have questions and comments.
I have a brief comment. So ILC will not only be there to support LHC, but only also have discovery potential on its own. So if you go through the talk of Peter he gave, you will clearly see that there are, and I don't know the details, but that there are processes which are even not accessible by the LHC and things which cannot even be observed by the LHC. So it's not only that there is interplay between LHC and ILC, and the LHC has seen that, then the ILC can do that. This is for sure important, but there's also no discovery potential of the ILC, and this is important to underline. Go through the talk of Peter, and you will see for sure a few examples. Not you, but the students here.
Fine.
Other questions?
Yeah, I have one question for the internal mass. Some people probably just say for the internal mass may not be a sort of a new physics, it's just say by introducing a so-called minimal extension of Lenard model can accommodate the internal mass. So I don't know what's your problem.
Yeah, it depends on your criteria. If you say introducing one particle state into your standard model is still not new physics, then it's not physics, no new physics. But you in the standard way as you outline, you need to introduce red hot neutrino. You need to introduce red hot neutrino as new state doesn't exist in the standard model to construct the Dirac mass. That's simplest. And simply put your carbon coupling in it and to give you the very light mass. That's okay, that's consistent, everything's consistent, but you need to introduce red hot neutrino into it anyway. So I think that's new physics beyond your standard model. Look up the textbook. No textbook writes the red hot neutrino into your standard model. This is new physics. That probably is not very profound. However, if you ask why you have this red hot neutrino, what the red hot neutrino properties are, and that's very, very deep, all the way to supersymmetry and to gas. For example, the red hot neutrino is a spheroid. Red hot neutrino has no gauge quantum numbers in the standard model. And that's weird, right? And then if you have this one, why you don't have two of them to form a Majorana mass? It's very natural. And if the symmetry doesn't prevent you writing this down, you should have it. That's always our general standard to write down the effective theory. Then once you write down the Majorana mass, it gives you the natural explanation why this neutrino is so light, because you can put the Majorana mass very high to give you the typical seesaw. Once you have this typical seesaw, Majorana mass, and then it gives you a lepton number violation. The lepton number violation gives you neutrino stability decay to look for, and it gives you the lepton genesis to explain the bound asymmetry in the early universe. The physics is really, really rich all the way. So that's really depends on what you mean beyond standard model. It is beyond standard model, I think. It's beyond standard model.
I have another comment to say. We have a workshop on the International Linear Collider. So I don't know whether or not people will agree with the idea. They probably in China we should form some of the working group. So just to make it more the research more efficient or effective. So I don't know the, this idea, because we discussed several people already, Professor Wu-Qing, Han Cao, and I don't know whether or not people have this kind of idea or supporting this idea. So I have a say, initial plan, just say we have a working group, and then we can communicate with other, each other, just say using some of the next meeting or the video meeting. So we have a regular meeting, either 1 month or 2 months. Maybe we can have international connection with Roman. So we can have a discussion in theory or experiment, detector design, and accelerators, things like that. So
if
put up your hand. Yeah, support it on this idea, and that's good. So support on that, and then we can just proceed through this way.
Think we I've emphasized this sometimes in discussion, so I think the easiest way to get into the business is to load down the software packages we have for the ILC study. So there's our full detector simulations available, there are even base packages where you can do your studies, send it to us, and then we can share the analysis and all these sorts of things. So maybe it's worthwhile to look at these software, start with these software things. That is the easiest thing, the sense we need to have a computer. Don't need to build something or...
Okay, other comments and questions? Could you comment on the anthropic principle?
Anthropic principle. That's okay. How much time do I have, Professor Liu, at the chair?
Couple minutes.
Okay.
The
anthropic principle is a way to formulate certain things to say these things just exist, and it's no easy scientific way to answer. That is just the opposite to the naturalist argument. The naturalist argument I gave you is that we want to understand things. We understand things scientifically to say this must be such way because of such such. But anthropic principle tells you that certain things you may not really know the answer. That may just happen, just like the cosmology constant, why is it so? It may just happen to be that way. The typical example is, the distance between sun and the earth. Okay. You may ask why the distance is so, why God is so good to us to put these two things together this way. If the Earth is closer to the Sun by 10%, it will be too hot and everything evaporates and we would not exist. If we are slightly further away, the water probably would be frozen forever, and then there would be no life in our Earth as well. So it's just in such a natural condition that everything happens. So if you really want to find this out scientifically, it may not be possible. Okay, so let's give you an example that certain things may not be possibly answered by scientific means. So that's the anthropic principle. So the reason, the reason Lu Chun was asking is that there is another branch of people thinking about this to get into this electrical symmetry breaking. You would say the cosmology constant probably is just a that way because we have so many different vacua, and it just happened to be there. So it just happened to be that way, rather than any reason why cosmological constant is so small and non-zero. So for the Higgs mass, and the Higgs mass, light Higgs mass is fine-tuned, as mentioned to you. I gave you the drastic example to shoot a target on the moon. The fine-tune probably is done just accidentally. So maybe the Higgs mass is light, but it's not easy to formulate any scientific reason to understand. So let's give up this. Don't make this as our first principle to guide our new physics. All these three new physics scenarios I gave you, all of these are based on the naturalist argument. What are the possible formulations to naturally lead you to a relative light Higgs or explain a relative light Higgs? Okay. If you give that up, the physics can be very different, can be pretty much anything. Okay. So that's pretty much anything. The typical example recently given is the so-called split supersymmetry. And that means there's some kind of supersymmetry at work, and the Higgs is light, and all the other particles are very, very heavy. So it's unnatural. But they gave up naturalist requirement. They don't want to insist naturalist argument anymore. It seems that I have tried to explain this picture to you, but I haven't answered Newton's question. Newton asked me, what do you think? Is that right?
That's what you thought. Okay. Awesome. Okay. Okay. I think it's time for me to invite